Hello, trade pros, and welcome to the Mind Over Markets podcast. Before we begin today's episode, I have an extremely exciting announcement. We are running a new segment called Between the Spread, where we will focus on order flow, and we're going to go deep dive into it, explain the tools, the strategies, the methodologies, the analysis, and we're going to explain to you how it works and how we use it. Now, this new segment is going to air starting today, and it will air every single first Thursday of each month. Now, I keep saying we. So who is we? A good friend and an awesome trader named Leo on Twitter, tag at ES underscore F underscore Leo, is joining me regularly as a co-host on this segment for one episode a month on the first Thursday. So this is the first episode of the series. I really hope you enjoy it. New series. We figured we'd set up a new intro too. Let's roll it and let's get into the show for today. Enjoy. You are listening to Between the Spread on the Mind Over Markets podcast, hosted by George Papazov and Leo the Tiger. Hit the bid, lift an offer. It doesn't really matter when you know how to read flow proper. So load up the lot size and let's ride. This podcast is for educational purposes and is not meant to be advice, recommendation, or solicitation to trade any securities. You assume all the risk, but hey, you also get to keep all the profit. And that's fun, right?
My version of the time and sales definition would basically be the time and sales is a receipt of what actually happened between sellers and buyers in the market. You know, just like you would go to a grocery store and buy, you know, rack of ribs, some brisket, all your seasonings, you get a receipt for all that, right? And so time and sales will show you the time, obviously, that a transaction occurred, the price it occurred at, what the volume was traded at, you know, how many contracts were traded, and then whether they were sold on the bid, below the bid, or bought on the ask or above the ask, which we'll get into that.
You know, I love that. I love that you use the analogy of the receipt, right? Because that's what it really is. Like, you know, that's a great definition. It basically shows you every single trade, one contract at a time, you know, of where it traded at what price. It's like, I think people, when they start trading, Leo, they look for like charting things, you know, like patterns and volume profile stuff, which is great. But really, all this stuff, once a trade is done, it's in the book, it's in the time and sales, you get a receipt. And so reading these receipts is almost more raw of an information. It's like the composition of how the candles formed, how the volumes formed, you know, and it almost tells you more important information, you know, at the beginning of your journey. You learn how to read the market by learning how to read this. And I think people skip it 99% of the time and then later on have to backtrack. And then, you know, it's always better to do do it the right way first, you know?
I think it's one of those, it's the old school method, you know, if you read like Jesse Livermore's book, you know, he talks about reading the tape, and that's exactly what time and sales was back in those days. And, you know, it was just a scrolling deal of the price. and I think it's underutilized.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I love Jesse Livermore's book, other than the ending. I mean, his life kind of ended suddenly and tragically, but...
Right.
Yeah, like I went to visit the CME building, trading floor there for the futures of SPOOS, and I didn't get to go in the pit, obviously, because I don't have a pass, and I think it was like a holiday. It might have been Thanksgiving when I went to visit Chicago to check it out, and I actually had a picture of like these ticker tapes all over the place with like a feed coming out, and it's nuts to see like people trading that way.
That's so crazy. I can't even imagine.
Now, that might be a cool idea. Imagine coming up with a device that actually prints time and sales and give you like the old school edge. Yeah, exactly. Introduces a sound component. But yeah, I love it, man. Like for the market receipts, that's all it is. It's a list of the receipts, and it's critical. So let's talk about, maybe Leo, we cover some of the order types that show up in this book of receipts, which is known as time and sales. For like Sierra chart users, this isn't the price ladder. If you go open a time and sales window, it's something separate. And we'll talk about filtering it, how it's helpful. I'll talk about how I use it. But let's back up and talk about, you know, what you could see going through time and sales, what kind of orders. Because it's only really four, right? It's only four things that repeat over and over.
Yep. So you're going to have basically at the ask. So that's somebody just buying, like if we're trading, you know, NES, we're trading 62s. And so somebody, if somebody bought 62 quarters, that would be a time and sales print on the ask. And then let's say there were only four lots offered there at 62 quarters and somebody had, you know, 10 to buy, then that would show up as 62 quarters on the ask and then 62 halves above the ask. And so because there were only four in that example available to buy, they would buy also the next price up. And so that would, that's what I would call a sweep, right? So he swept the current offer and the next available offer above it as well. And so there's at the ask, there's above the ask, and then same thing on the sell side. And so you can have on the bid or below the bid. So those are kind of the four order types as I look at them.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. And like for me, when I see that kind of information, like I think sometimes when we try to read order flow in trading, we try to keep it in its own little box of like, hey, I'm trading. But if you expand that, like, you know, we do this in life. It's like it'd be the equivalent of you waiting in line, you know, to sell, you know, let's say 10 widgets of whatever it is. And somebody shows up, says, I want to buy 100. What are you going to instantly think? You're going to be like, ah, crap, I might have sold it for too cheap.
Right.
Right. So it's like,
you need to raise the price.
Exactly, right? It's like, oh, wait, I want to cancel my sell order. Well, too late. I already bought them. So the next guy sees that and says, I'm going to cancel mine and raise my offer to sell it higher. And then that's how kind of price moves. So when we look at the time in sales, you got to remember, it's like, it's dynamic, right? This is like a competition to value an asset. And I think this is the part that's lost on people is they look at a number and they try to understand, what does it mean for my trade? Before you look at it, what does it mean for the trade? Just remember, it's an auction. It's real time, right? It's dynamic. And just like understand why somebody would go and buy, you know, buy the ask and above it and understand what that plays in their strategy before trying to utilize it for yours. I think this is something we try to drill in people's head. It's like understand the whole playing field before you decide how you're going to play the game. And right. Yeah, I love it. So ultimately, with those four order types, we could see a lot of information. I'm just curious, Leo, how do you use like time and sales with those four data points on it? Like, what are some things that would tell you under certain examples? Like, example one, let's say there's a lot of volume suddenly out of nowhere that bought the ask and above it. Like, what would that help you decide as a trader?
So there's several things I'm looking for. The most important for me, kind of the way I trade, is aggression. And mm-hmm. So you kind of mentioned, you know, that example, right? So if somebody comes in just all of a sudden, let's just say we're hanging out at in that 62 area, and then all of a sudden, I keep saying 62 because that's every time I look over at my ES Dom, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
So if all of a sudden somebody comes in and starts buying the ask and above the ask, then you know, your tape will light up, or mine does. Mine's configured to highlight above ask and below bid, so I can really see or distinguish those sweeps. So when I see that come through, and then I see, you know, just kind of a little bit of a turn there and like either behavior of the market participants or just general speed, that's another thing that's really important. So I want to see aggression and speed. So I want to see those guys really sweep one way or the other, and then I want to see the speed as well. So it's like, you know, at the same time that they're aggressing into the market, they're doing it very rapidly. Like, I've got to get in right now. You know, and you can see that on the time and sales. And then obviously, you know, you want to see price go that direction as well. So that's the key. Like, so if you have speed and aggression, that's there's components there, right? You know what's happening. But the most important thing that must happen from there is price has to move.
Right. Follow through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because then that becomes the next thing I want to talk about, the absorption, right? But like, I love the way, like, that's how I use it as well. And I think there's many ways to really extrapolate this data and come with ideas. I think that the one point that the new trader kind of gets a little caught up in this is they want to know the why, right? It's like, you know, like you mentioned, really, we're just trying to find motivation. Are you a motivated seller or buyer? And how desperate are you really to get in or out of a position? That's all that moves the market, those two things. But then I think some traders will look at it, Leo, and they'll say like, oh, well, who's buying this? Why are they buying it here? Are they buying
to... Doesn't matter.
Exactly, right? Why are they buying to get long? Or are they buying to close their short? And how do we know? And really, a buyer is a buyer, right? If you try to buy it here and price doesn't go up, whether you're buying to get in and getting stopped out on your long, or you're buying to close a short, which then goes back down anyways, it sucks that you bought the top regardless, right? And I think that's one thing that we kind of, we forget when we're helping other people with order flow is those kind of basics. It's like, it doesn't really matter. It's not our job to determine, are they closing? Are they opening positions? It's really our job to just determine where's the momentum going to be based on aggression and their motivation for the direction of the trend.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. That couldn't be better said, in my opinion. You know, like you said, well, are they getting long? Are they opening a long position? Are they covering a short position? Like you said, it doesn't matter. We're trading order flow. And so we're actually just riding the coattails of the bigger guys. I mean, it's their playground. Our job is to analyze, you know, what they're trying to do. And then, you know, take trades based on the flow of the orders coming through.
Right? Yeah. If I was trying to figure out why somebody's doing something, I'm not smart enough for this business. Like, I'm not smart enough to think, you know what I mean? Like I kind of give the analogy of surfing. Like if you're out on the water waiting for a wave and the wave comes, you're not on your phone, like on the weather network. Where did the storm originate? Like, why did the storm happen? You're just getting on the wave and surfing that thing because it's fun. And that's the same thing with trading, right? It's like, I think the less we try to find out the why at the beginning and the more we focus on actually the value of the data, I think that really supercharges the development curve. And like for me, you know, I actually, Leo, implemented time and sales almost last. I started my order flow journey with the footprint because everything moved and it was so sexy and recent new information we tend to value the most.
Right.
Right. So it's like, and then when I saw time and sales later on, after I started trading order flow, I went backwards. I was like, holy crap, this gives me a way bigger edge than any other tool I found. Like, this is the pulse of the market in real time, right?
Yeah. You can literally see speed and aggression and everything you want to see right in front, like right on your screen. You know, like the footprint chart doesn't show you aggression. It doesn't show you speed.
Exactly.
It just shows you, you know, these were bought and these were sold. Here's a, you know, 100 by 200 kind of type deal.
Love it, man. I love that we're having this deep of a discussion about it. And I think we should also talk about filtering it, right? Because we just open time and sales. Most people just get every single contract. And one lot traders, you know, no offense, isn't as important. The bigger the size, like we said, size and aggression, right? The bigger the size, the more influence it'll have on the market. The bigger the size, the more traders are going to notice it as well. They're going to be, holy shit, there's a big order here. So I filter mine out at 9 or greater. I don't know what value you look at, but I don't really care about contract trade. On the ES, by the way, every market's different too, right? But anything greater than 9 is what I'm interested in. And I found that's kind of like a sweet spot. What do you use for?
For ES, I have 5. And then you can make fun of me, but on NQ, I don't have any filters on.
And that thing must move faster.
It does, but you know, that gives you a pretty good understanding of, you know, pace of tape, the speed of the tape.
I wouldn't dare make fun of you. You're a great Nasdaq trader, and you know, that's not a secret. So, you know, whatever you have value or edge in, whatever works. I just find that Nasdaq, it's a bit fast for a newer trader.
Right.
I think filtering it out when you start is probably the best because the less data points you have. Yes, it'll work less often, but you'll see less information, which will in turn give you more time to interpret it. I think the danger of this instrument is if you're watching contract by contract, your head's going to spin. You're going to think, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, you're just going to fake yourself out.
Exactly, yeah. So less is more at the start. I don't know. Try it. Like a 5 is great. The lower the number, the more trades you're going to see because it gets closer to the quantity of 1, right, which is every single trade. So
right.
You filter by 5, you're going to see less instances. If you filter 9 or greater contracts, only the trade on the ask or the bid in one shot, by the way, this is, you know, one trade at the same time, then, you know, that's going to show you less data. So experiment with it. You know, you might even want to do 50. Maybe you just want to see the really big ones. You'll probably get a couple prints, you know, every 10 minutes, but just try it with different filters. Never take one person's number and assume it's going to work for you. That's the worst thing in the world.
So the big thing for me, just using an unfiltered time in sales, the reason why I do that is I'm more or less looking for what is the behavior in a zone, mm-hmm. right? So NASDAQ, you know, is not necessarily about trading a specific level, in my opinion. It's more about trading in specific areas.
Right.
And so you can see that much easier just by using unfiltered time and sales, just kind of see, is there a responsive player on one side or the other?
I love it. So does this help you, like, Leo, in the entry phase of the trade or the management part of it? Like, what part is it the most asset to you, the most value?
So for me, it's beneficial for entry, because if you're paying attention, let's say you're just watching, right, and you're just observing, and you see markets come, you know, the NASDAQ come into maybe a level you have marked on your chart, an LVN, you know, whatever it might be, and you see a response on the time and sales from the side that you're looking to trade with, right? Mm-hmm. So if you see response, if you're looking for a long and you see those responsive buyers, and they come in with size or aggression, then you may want to, you know, start looking for a pullback into that area to take a trade. Okay. So there's one, that's kind of one use case for the time and sales. The other would be for exit, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're down, like, let's say you're in a trade and you take off your core position and now you're down to runners. Unless you have a very dedicated, you know, I'm taking take profit 2 at this percentage or this number of points, or, you know, take profit 3 at this number of points. I utilize the time and sales for exit as well. And so what I look for on that is pretty much the same kind of deal, right? So if I'm watching, if I get along into an area and we you know, catch like a 20-point rotation, what happens when we start coming up to the previous high or the previous, you know, rotation down? If there's responsive selling there, then, you know, I'm basically looking to either cover the entire position or start, you know, just, you know, cut the position, you know, down to smaller size.
I love it. So it's a really big component for you with your in-trade management, not as much your analysis before trades.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I kind of use it the same. I like to run trades with it. And you know what? Sometimes it's a disqualifier for me too, Leo. Like, I'll get a trade that's really nice and long and this area is being defended. You know, it's a great support. There's some pretty big volume going through the ask. There's offers running out of the way on the ladder. Everything looks good. Like, perfect textbook order flow trade. And I'm long, and suddenly I see somebody slapping the bid on size. I'm like, okay, maybe like the idea is good, but the area is still not. It's still premature. Like, maybe the selling hasn't exhausted yet. So sometimes it actually gets me out of trades. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes it works. It gets me out of a trade I would have lost. Other times it gets me out of a trade that I should have just held on to. But, I mean, therein kind of lies the thing, right? You got to watch it long enough to know how you're going to use it and what value it brings you.
Well, you're supposed to be perfect in every trade, George.
Well, I'm at 99, but not at 100%. I still got to impress Fintwit, 99%, you know, but
the market psychs everyone out, you know?
Yeah. Amen to that, man.
But you know what you're looking, I mean, that's, I utilize basically the same thing. And when you see, you know, you see the price go up and, you know, some bids start to chase it up, and let's just say, you know, I don't know if you've been using the MBO at all.
I have, but, yeah.
You know, just more often than not, you'll see price rotate up, you know, maybe like 20 or 30 points. And then all of a sudden, we'll see a guy come in with like a 50 lot or 100 lot in NQ. That's a pretty decent size. And, you know, sometimes he'll even chase up the ladder and maybe just short covering. But, you know, when he gets sold into, or he gets execution on that trade, That's not necessarily bullish in my opinion.
Yeah.
All the time, because, you know, he's getting a fill, but he's getting sold into. And so somebody's willing to take a pretty large block and sell into it. And so they're going to want to protect that, you know, if that's an aggressive seller.
Yeah, for sure. It's like when aggressive buyers chasing the market, it's all good and well if you're long until that buyer gets filled, because now it's like, now they're gone. You know that?
Right. Well, where's everyone else?
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden, nobody's buying. And what does the seller say? Oh, wait, I'm trying to sell 10 points above. Maybe I'm not going to get it. Let me bump that offer a little bit lower. And yeah. So, like, yeah, this is how it all plays in into ultimately what we call the edge. Yeah, but I love that. So time in sales, we've kind of gone through it, what it is, what it shows, the filter quantity sizes, how we use it, the concept of, you know, chasing the market. I think the next thing we'll slide into is absorption. But I think before we go there, Leo, I want to just cover this one basic thing. The way, I don't know how Sierra or your platform that you guys are using, that you're the listeners of the podcast, codes things, but you got to understand a trade on the bid needs to be red. Right, because I think sometimes bid trades are actually blue, showing that they're buyers in some platforms. And you have to color code it the opposite way of what you think, because somebody's going to say, hey, isn't a limit order a seller? Well, yes, but think about again of what Leo said, motivation. Are they a motivated seller if they're just parking an offer? Right? Wouldn't it be more motivated of a seller to sell at the best bid, which is a market order? So by changing the color coding and making the offer blue, and trades on the bid red, you're actually tracking the market orders. Because realistically, there's no trade out there that matches limit to limit or market. You know, like limit to limits don't match. Market to market, maybe, depending on how it auctions. But what you're trying to find out...
If there was a bunch of limit orders on the book, there would no, the market wouldn't move.
Exactly. If nobody was willing to trade a market order,
you just have bids and offers sitting there and, you know, you have the spread.
Yeah, it's so funny because I ask that question a lot. What moves the market? And it's people like, you know, aggressive like sellers. Okay, but expand on that. They're like limit orders. It's like, no, market orders. If there's only limits and no one wants to market, we're stuck until somebody takes some of the quantity off the ladder. So I think that's important to mention. Just to check the color coding if you're going to start using this, because colors tend to be very significant to their psychology, right? So just make sure that you're, when you're mapping this out, the offer trades, anything on the offer is actually blue, and anything on the bid is red, because we're trying to track market
price. I'm so glad you said that, because there are some platforms out there that default the opposite way.
Yeah.
And I won't mention their name, but they also have their delta footprint charts are backwards as well.
So, oh, like, my God.
They have trades on the bid as green and trades on the ask, or sorry, I'm getting it backwards myself. Trades on the bid is green, yeah.
And yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
as red, yeah.
Which is crazy, right? It's like if you're gonna make a platform, but you know what? Like, that's why you have to be very careful. And I'm happy we're having this discussion on it. Check, make sure your platform does it correctly, and if it doesn't, switch it, because you're gonna eventually you're gonna be like, this time in sales things suck. Every time there's buyers, it sells off.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that brings up like a good point. Maybe some people aren't always aware of is that, you know, the market trades diagonally.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the reason that, you know, you have to make sure you have the right color scheme, right? We're trading 65s and somebody sells, somebody's going to sell aggressive sellers. They're going to sell 64 and three quarter, right? And
yeah.
So they're reaching down at the spread, so they're diagonally down, selling into the bid, and then buyers will step up right diagonally across the spread to buy. And you know, that's the basic point. I think a lot of people that start out don't understand that.
Yeah, I think that's critical, to foundational to all of order flow, because you start out the wrong way with that and nothing makes sense. It does. You'll eventually going to start to understand, hey, I'm seeing the numbers, but they mean opposite things if you watch it close enough. So, yeah, that's a point to mention, because that's super important. And Leo, you actually taught me this, or showed it to me with time and sales, that you could back like color, like highlight color, the trades that trade above the ask and below the bid, which basically means like it's a sweep. Somebody depleted all the available limits and then reached for another level to sell or buy more because right. that's how much size they have. Like that's been super helpful because it just sticks out. So basically on my time in sales, and I'll put a picture of this in the show notes, the ones that are above ask or below bid are actually color-coded with a background in addition to the coloring of the actual text. It'll make sense when you look at the show notes. But you gave me that idea to look at it like that. I'm like, oh my God, that's genius.
Yeah, so normal, like a normal trade on bid or ask is a black background, right, with a blue or red text. It was sold or bought.
Right.
And then an above, which would be a sweep. So above ask or below bid would be either a blue background with black text, right? So just the opposite.
Yeah.
Or a red background with black text.
It just makes it pop. And it is very important information that should stand out, honestly.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Let's slide into the concept of absorption. So we talked about, you know, why a strong market buyer who repeatedly is chasing price higher is bullish, why that's a good thing. And we also talked about why a strong market seller on the way down is a good confirmation that, hey, there's strong selling. If I'm short, this makes me feel confident. Now let's take it to the next stage, Leo, where there's strong market buying and maybe it went up a couple points, but there's a ton of buying, but the price is just going nowhere. The speed is fast. The aggression is there, but price isn't moving. I'd like to kind of go into that concept because that to me is probably one of the best ways I exit trades at clutch levels and also very important information in the setup of the fade or going against that momentum at the level.
Right. So absorption, simply stated, is if you can imagine water flowing through a sponge. So if I stick a water hose into a sponge and I'm aggressively, I've got the water turned all the way up and what I'm looking for comes out the other side, it isn't really much, right? So you may refer that to as getting soaked or just getting absorbed completely. And so what happens there is maybe there's aggressive buyers or sellers. They're just sweeping. And what's happening on the other side of that is there's another participant that's a passive that's basically, let's say they're sweeping the ask, right? So there's just tons of buying and price isn't going anywhere. Well, there's a participant on the other side, a seller that's just passively just selling and reloading. And when you spot that absorption, that's usually a very important turning point because one side is going to give up, right? Either that seller is going to stop passively selling or the buyer is going to stop actively buying. Usually, in my experience, it's the participant that's the aggressor that's going to give up because he's running out of ammo. He's more likely to run out of ammo and morale. Yeah. If he's just buying and prices are going anywhere, he's like, well, you know, somebody's on the other side, you know, I'm just getting jammed, right? And so
yeah,
he may then start to look, you know, to exit position, or the rest of the traders that are there with him are going to start puking their position as well, because you know they're obviously saying, well, shit, we're not going anywhere. And so I'm going to wait, you know, I'm going to get out and wait for a better entry. Or if you see that, you know, you could short into that absorption and, you know, just use a pretty tight risk above it. Because the thing is usually when you spot like significant absorption, it tends to be at the extreme of the range. So, you know, at the highs or the lows. And it makes sense because you have, you know, kind of breakout traders trying to break, you know, to new highs or break to new lows. And maybe you have someone on the other side of that, you know, absorbing that move or trying to absorb that move.
Yeah.
For me, it's not as important in the middle of the range unless it's, I'm in a trade and I'm looking to cover position, and I start to see some absorption, which happens all the time, right?
Yeah.
Absorption happens every second of the market, but it's most important when, you know, you just have this, we just hang and hang and hang in this area, and one side isn't getting what they want.
Love that. You're dropping gems today, Leo. You came prepared. You're stepping up. I love it. I love that hose and sponge example. Like that's brilliant. I haven't heard it before, and I think it's such a good visualization of what's happening, because at any given moment, someone's a hose, someone's a sponge.
You know what I mean? Someone's getting hosed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, someone's getting hosed. So like, I really love that analogy for that too. There's that dynamic. You're getting hosed.
Well, I just made it up. Yeah, I just made that up. So,
well, that's
we're gonna have to trademark that. Hang on, I'm gonna write it to the trademark people.
You're actually probably doing it. Can you trademark an idea? You can, obviously, but like that specific?
I don't know, man. I've got some really good sayings. You know, my most famous one is like, if B period is inside of A period, then I go fuck off for the day. So if B is inside of A, I fuck off for the day. That's my rule.
That's that's amazing. Yeah, you probably could trademark it. Yeah, you should. That's actually a great one with the sponge.
Yeah.
Because like, I'll bring it back to that discussion. Like, you know, that if you understand what Leo just said, you understand the market to a level, like the composition, the real structure, like the glue that holds the market together more than probably like 90% of people that are trading. You know, like you're understanding it at a very complex level. It's like, you know, that concept in itself, the absorption is critical to a lot of things. And I think where you see absorption at the moment, you could map that out and it later becomes a level in the future as well. You know what I mean? Like it isn't a surprise to see it at key levels when you watch for it. Like watch next time it hits a big resistance in the market. You'll see exactly what Leo described. And then watch it develop in between levels. And sometimes that actually becomes an order flow level. It's like you would have never guessed that level, but the market just showed its cards to you. And I love tracking absorption. I think it's one of the key things. And if you think about it, it's like, think about the dynamic that causes the reversal. Because more often than not, like Leo said, an absorption is a reversal event because your market buying, right? Your market buying, it's going up. Your market buying, it's going up. So you're being rewarded for buying, like trigger happy. You just keep adding your position with market orders until one point you hit a level where what it's trading against isn't fully visible. You're hitting some hidden liquidity here because, you know, those events happen where somebody just keeps reloading the offer. It could be an iceberg, whatever it is, right? And you're seeing new liquidity come out of nowhere. And now that market buyer, think about the psychology of that. It's like, uh-oh, I've been buying market. It's working. Suddenly it's not. Think about what you're thinking of as that buyer. Number one, you're thinking, I'd better stop doing this.
Right.
And so, okay, great. So if you're thinking I better stop doing this, now you lost one of the big drivers of the upside to that trend because that aggressive buyer is gone. When that aggressive buyer leaves, think about people who got long on the back of that aggressive buyer, like, wait a minute, this guy's gone. And when you're seeing the bid or buying start to decrease at a level that just got absorbed, what does a seller think? I'm 5 points above trying to sell, but like there's an idiot right now trying to buy and the market's not going up. Let me sell it to him now. So now the offers, the sell intent is coming down just as the buyers stop buying. On the flip side of it, everyone who's already bought now has to put a stop loss below too. And suddenly after absorption, everyone that bought now turns to a seller. Bam, we go back down.
Right.
So like to me, that right there is a true potency of time and sales. That absorption is great. I love it because usually happens after I'm already long, made some money. And it's like, knock, knock, Georgie, get out. Get out at least a portion of your position. Do I listen to it all the time? No. Nope. Do I regret it after? Yes. Yep. But it's gold info. Speaking of that, look at it right now on the S&P. Oh, holy moly.
Yeah, we're ramping. This is great. Yeah.
Good for you, Nazi.
So you just brought up one thing. So an easy way to spot this absorption, if you're not able to see it on the time and sales, is just put a delta profile on your chart. And most of the most of the platforms out there have a volume profile, right? So where you can just see how much volume was traded at what price. Most of them have settings for, okay, instead of showing me just the total volume, show me the ask minus the bid volume. And that's going to give you the delta, right? So how much was done on the bid versus the ask, which will either be negative or positive. Mm-hmm. You will see absorption, like very large size absorption. That's really important. On ES, you can see upwards of, you know, negative 3,000, 4,000 lots at the low or near the low. And, you know, you can lean on those levels, you know, because if they were absorbed once, right, the sellers got basically smashed. If we return to that level, well, those sellers need to exit that trade, and they're going to want to exit as close as they can, you know, to the area they were aggressive in.
Love it.
You know, so they were immediately wrong. You got absorbed, price went against them, and now we have a return to that area being an opportunity to re-long or take risk and put it on the long side and just use the other side of that absorption area as your stop out.
Love it. And that's a nice high probability trade. Like, look, it just happened now on the S&P at the 60, right? Like there's 3,800 there that has been sitting all morning. And it happened again today at the, I think, 53 quarter or 50 half. There's 3,500. And I really love the delta. And I'll give you guys a little bit of a beginner's like quick explanation in a second. But I love the delta when a key level breaks and then just everyone gets jammed on the short side because you know you're running the stops there, right? Like everyone gets stopped out. The sell delta explodes and it can't go down and it edges up two or three ticks. That's like, to me, that's an order flow long all day long. I take all those trades. I have to. Like, there's certain things that when I see, I got to do them. I can't think, I just do. And that's one of them. I love to see a good break of a level where sellers get jammed. They can't keep going lower. And then suddenly you start to see buying happening on the offer. I'm like, oh my God, this is happening. Let's get on board.
Let's go.
Yeah. Hard to resist that.
Really 3,000 lots on the bid at 4,650 right now?
Let me see. Wow, you went down there, eh? 40.
I just noticed it.
You know what? I only have mine.
I'm just totally sidetracked.
100 levels.
Okay.
And I can't see it down. There might be. What is it? 46?
4,650. Yeah.
You know what? There was a lot of MBO activity around 46 to 48 this morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I think some of those bids are probably holding out. But that's crazy. Like, you're not going to get filled there now. Or maybe, who knows? But
market likes to trade where the big size is, right?
It's true. Goes to and through liquidity. So, yeah, just to explain to you guys on the concept of the delta, because we're going to spend more time with that tool in our upcoming podcast. Like, what Leo and I are going to do is unpack one thing per episode. But What the delta really is, imagine taking all the volume that traded at market on the offer, all right, and subtracting it by all the volume that traded on the bid. It's actually the opposite. It's bid minus, offer is the bigger one. It's negative when there's selling, all right? So the buyers are subtracted from that. So really, at the end of the day, it's basically taking the time in sales and adding it up at each price level vertically and showing, is there an imbalance of selling or buying here? And then people usually say, well, how is it possible that there's more sellers at this level? Because for every seller, there's a buyer. But it's where you trade at that level. It's important. Did you trade on the bid or the offer? Right? So anyways, we'll get into delta. I didn't want to like sidestep that much. But
yeah, sorry. That was my fault. I'm just like a...
look what you did, Leo. No, but that's those tools tie in together for sure. So...
I love that you just said that there's for every seller, there's a buyer, and for every buyer, there's a seller. And that's 100% true. But right. Who's the aggressor?
Exactly.
That's what I want to know.
Who's the bully?
Because there is the opposing. Every time you take a trade or there's a trade taken, there's an opposing trade taken on the other side. You don't know what their intentions are, market makers could be just another trader, whoever has orders out there, and you know, they could be hedging the other side. You know, they just have to, you know, manage whatever they've got, right? So I think to like just want to make the point that it's what is most important is the aggression in any trade.
And anything in life, right? We're trying to pinpoint who the aggressor is, like animals in their kingdom try to find the alpha male, you know, like really in life, all we're trying to do is find the aggressor and either protect ourselves from them or try to take over the helm. So it's like, that's key right there, Leo. We just want to know the aggressor because they're the ones who are going to likely move the market. That's like active trading, whereas, you know, sitting on the limit's a little more passive. And, you know, before the limit trades, you're going to have to find a market buyer, which is why, or market seller, which is why the market order is more important, because that's what's moving everything. And that's the aggressor. So I love that we discussed that, because that part's often missed out on. So, you know, we've gone pretty deep into the time and sales.
Too far?
No, I like it. Let's see if we can go a little bit further. Oh, I had a thing that I get asked often in traders, somewhere towards the, you know, middle part of once they discover order flow, they sit with it a little bit, and then they get this idea. Because some people just want to take the opposing view to the point that they get the real deep down info. And it's like, they say, if you were a big trader, why would you show your size? Why would you do an order that is going to expose you? And I love this discussion, right? Because there's people who say like real institutions like aren't going to do this. End of the day, if you want to make a trade, everyone's going to see it. You could try to hide it. You could try different order types, different strategies. At the end of the day, when it hits time and sales, you're done. Like you can't hide yourself too much. Think about this. You look at 100 lot. I look at 100 lot and it's like, that's a big trader. How do you know that's all they're trading? What if they're trying to get 5,000 off to hedge a position for a $1 billion portfolio? Suddenly, right. Their 100 lot is your one lot. And so it's like, right. Why are you showing your one lot? Because you got to do the trade, right? It's like,
you got to get it done.
Yeah, it's like, that's your job. But you got to put the trade through. At some point, we're going to see it. And that's the beauty of order flow. Yeah.
But well, that's a whole nother topic too. You know, it's like, okay, well, why would you hide your size? Why would you show your size? Well, maybe you want to show your size because you want to intimidate the other side.
Exactly. And
you, maybe know you what? Want to hide your size so that you're not showing your hand yet. Maybe you hide your size. You hide your size first, and then you show the intimidation, the aggression.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But no matter how they try to bluff you, you'll see it, because maybe you'll show some size as a seller, and then immediately flips to a big buy trend with a whole bunch of buying. Now you know somebody tried to sell it first to spook the market lower so they could get it a couple ticks lower, right? Average in.
Right. Yep.
And like, this is what I love about futures trading. This is why, to me, futures trading is above anything else for day trading, because on stocks, you don't have the broad participation because it's just one stock, right?
Right.
Whereas futures, it's a whole index and there's a whole lot of managed money that's pegged, tied for performance reasons to the value of the S&P. And this is why I love it. Forex trading, you don't get any of this. You only look at whatever broker you're trading with. That's the only volume they have. I love when people say volume on Forex. Like, you don't know how much volume there is. You just know what the broker you're connected to, but there's no real volume. But I like futures because it's centralized. And any person in the world that wants to trade on the futures market, on the ES futures, goes through the exact same book as we do. And I love that.
Isn't that crazy?
Wild. It's nuts. It blows my mind.
Oh man, I talk to traders all over the world, you know, and I'm like blown away. I'm like, wait, you're in South Africa, you're in Australia, you're in, you know, New Zealand.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And you're all trading with or against them at any given moment. You're trading with those traders, with Goldman Sachs, against Goldman Sachs. It's like, you know, that's why I love order flows, because you could see every trade going through, and it's mind blowing that you could, you know, sometimes when I discovered it, I'm like, how is this not illegal? But I was new and naive. I'm like, is what I'm doing illegal? But it's good. It should be. You can't see the stops on time and sales. Well, you can actually, but you don't know if they're stops. It just shows up as a market order.
You want to talk about stop runs on the time and sales? Can you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's chat about that.
What's a stop run look like to you?
Well, to me, like a stop run, I really like the footprint here to confirm it, right? Because you get the diagonal auction versus just where the trade printed. So like,
yeah.
if you look at time and sales, to me, a stop run on time and sales is a quantity that's large that trades, like it's time stamped on one, like, because it goes, right now it's 257.41. You know, it goes down to the second. That's time stamped on the same second, but let's say it's a buy stop. So everyone's short. And the, what I really look for to say, hey, this is probably a stop run, is actually the price level. So if I see a lot of aggressive buying, for example, above a resistance, I'm like, okay, this is probably stop runs. And then I'll go to footprint, and what I like to see is a lot of volume trade on the offer, but zero on the bid on every single tick on the way up.
So the so on the footprint, it's what I would call poor structure.
Yeah.
So if there's all the volume's done on one side and there's nobody selling, yeah, definitely. That's a stop. The way I would say it is pretty similar. Like you're coming up to a previous high, right, where it's logical for stops to be, and you get this explosive move through that area and then no follow through.
Yeah. So almost like everything we've talked about so far, right? You get the explosive move. It's fast. It's big in size. And then nothing happens right after it breaks. And those are my favorite moments, actually, to take a short. Like, I love a broken level that fails. It comes back in. I'm like, oh, baby, I got him. I'm selling right in the middle of where that stop run happened.
Everyone got stopped out. And here's George taking the short.
Yeah.
All you shorts just got stopped out. And I'm taking the train back through it.
Yeah, let me try to get a piece. And then sometimes I'm the fool that they get stopped out with them. And I'm like, I saw this was happening, yet I decided to participate. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it's on me. But again, nothing works all the time. And you got to also remember, I think the point that you brought up, Leo, is super critical, that it's hard to come by unless you talk to somebody who's been trading for a while, is that, look, you're only, at the end of the day, you're only trading with and against the size of people want you to see. So those moments where somebody gets stopped out, you know what I mean? Yes, you see it. But who knows, maybe they had the intention, let's bump the stop down, let's run it up and get some buyers, and then I'm going to hit it even bigger on the way down. So this is why it's not 100% accurate. And even if you could see every single order, you know, somebody told me if I could see the stops in the market, I'd make so much money. I'm like, no, you wouldn't. It wouldn't be any different.
Yep, it wouldn't.
Yeah, like if you just had stop orders below the best offer, you know, it wouldn't really help you much.
Just look at the recent swing high and lows. There's stops there. You can see them.
Yeah.
you don't need to see the actual stops. You know they're there.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, a stop is a market order, and it goes and gets printed with the other market orders. But by the location of where it occurs, like trading an order flow is kind of like location. Like a certain pattern occurring at a specific location means something, and that pattern out of the location, it's still interesting, but it's not critical.
Right.
So this is why a lot of these order flow setups at a key level, it doesn't bypass the fact that you have to have a trading plan. It doesn't bypass the fact that you have to understand market structure and key levels, and, you know, drawing those levels off of volume profile, off of price structure. You're not going to bypass that. You still got to learn that. But in those moments, order flow and time and sales specifically helps you get the edge for the timing. It's the difference between taking a trade you get stopped out on versus one where you're like, okay, this is the moment. It kind of gives you the when. That's all it does.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you have the appropriate execution, you're less likely to have to take the trade multiple times to get into it.
You know what we call that, a trade pro, Leo?
What?
That's called the Georgian Gale, because
the Georgian Gale.
You know Martin Gale, where like it goes down and you keep buying? The Georgian Gale is you're getting stopped out each time, but you keep trying it. It's kind of like a hard-headed move. It works sometimes in higher volatility, not always.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of the way that I try too, because, you know, like I use tighter, what I would consider to be pretty tight stops, but I'll take the same trade, you know, two or three times. And, you know, as long as I have the right thesis, you know, it'll work. Well, you could still have the right thesis and it's wrong. But if you're taking the right thesis trade in the wrong location, then you're going to get, it's like literally the difference between your stop out and your first take profit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly, man. There's a difference between buying something because, like you said, the thesis is still holding, and buying something just because you got stopped out and didn't work the first time. There's a big difference between that. And the problem with repeatedly trying a level is that sometimes that edge is blurred, right? Like, because we follow so much data and information, if you want to find a long at any given moment, you could take this info and twist it and find a long at any given moment. Like, you know, nobody's going to hold you back, and you could even believe in it that it's a good long. But if you're repeatedly trading a level, just make sure that you're trading it on a thesis, on a concept, on an idea that's supporting in real-time information what you're trying to do, versus, oh, I'm only buying it a second time because I got stopped out the first time. And I, you know, that's not a good reason.
Get my money back.
Yeah, exactly. I want my money. I want a refund.
it's the worst thing you can do.
Wanting your money back is a good way to donate more.
Yeah.
You know? So, Leo, this is good. We went in on time and sales, man. We've talked at ask, at bid, above, below, sweeps, talked about importance of market orders, aggression, absorption, the speed with which things are coming through, you know, and we've talked about how we interpret it and trade it. Just curious, if I could ask you, what's your bracket like on NASDAQ? How much stop do you... Like, what's your stop loss on a position on a core?
Well, so my, like, entering a trade, I have a 10-point stop. However, if I'm wrong or think that I need to wait for a better spot, then I'll flatten, you know, at 3 points or 4 points, which is super tight. Because it's just the way I work.
Remember, this is NASDAQ, too. A 10-point stop on NASDAQ is probably like 2 points on the ES.
Yeah, it's not much. Yeah. But you know, like I said, I'll flatten out and then just kind of reset.
Yeah.
You know, before that 10-point stop out takes place. Just cuz, you know, for the way I trade NQ, at least when I enter the trade, like, I want to see immediate
follow through, basically.
Hang on. Sorry. Yeah, I want to see immediate follow through. You know, so that if I don't see that immediate follow through, then I know that I need to wait or that something's wrong.
Yeah. So you're probably pretty similar to me, cause I scratch a lot of trades, like a lot, like, I mean, not a ton, but I'd say that on a day, look, there's some days that are like perfect. The market's moving, order flow works really well. Like those days I don't scratch, as much. And it really depends on the situation. There, like, I can't give you a generic kind of, you know, thesis on this, but I do tend to scratch quite a bit. And sometimes that comes at the cost of, I got in, I saw more real-time information, I got out of a long, then it goes up 3 points. Now I'm like, well, shit, I got to set up the trade 3 points higher because I scratched my way out of it. But I find that scratching quicker, what it does for me is it keeps me more focused on the real time. I find when I start trailing for these like big 30 point wins that I'm planning, like every time I take a plus 20, plus 30 point win, I never planned on that. You know what I mean? It just happened. I just stayed in the trade because more info supporting it.
Right.
So I tend to scratch more in terms of my style. I'm just curious, because you're trying multiple times at a level, do you scratch a bit or?
A scratch for me, what I would consider a scratch would be your flattening right at your entry.
Yeah, or like give or take, like, it, you know, one to two ticks, I kind of consider that a scratch mentally.
I don't think I do. I mean, usually I'm stopping out at least 4 or 5 points below entry or at the full 10-point stop out.
Mm. And that's, you know, that depends on style. I know some people who scratch a lot tend to be more scalpers. You know, those are the people using like 7 ticks on NASDAQ for a stop, for example. It's like,
immediate stop as soon as you entered on NASI.
Seven ticks. 7 ticks is a guaranteed stop.
You're in, you're out.
Yeah, exactly.
Have fun.
What was my fill? Oh, wait, I'm not out anymore. I'm not in anymore. Yeah. Would that be a guaranteed way to lose money? 7 tick stop on NASDAQ, and regardless of what you click, you're going to get stopped?
Probably.
I should test it.
I mean, unless you just caught like this, if you're just, you know, put a buy stop at a recent high and just wait for that explosive stop run and your profits, like, you know, 2 points or 3 points, those might work.
Yeah, yeah, scalping but it.
That's not a way to trade.
That's a stressful way. You know those like memes where they're like, meet Gary, he's a 22-year-old scalper, and it's like a picture of a 70-year-old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone was buying, and price was going up, so I entered the trade, and it said, nope, I'm not moving anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absorption. That's really good. Well, you have anything you want to add on? I think we did a fairly decent job, if I might say, of covering time and sales for newer trader.
We'll leave that to the critics, whether we did a good job or not. But no, I think it was good discussion. Always enjoy speaking with you and listening to your podcast too. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate that.
It's really, if you're not listening to George's podcast on the regular, you definitely need to, because there's so many gems dropped from just a mindset standpoint, account management, all that stuff. It's really good.
Thank you, brother. Really appreciate you. And you're a trader. I know that's fantastic. So I respect you a lot. And thank you for saying that. I do appreciate it. And I'm excited.
Later.
Yeah. 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 Just how much you say it was on this? That's funny. Well, yeah, I enjoy this. I'm really excited to see where the series go. But did you know that if you tell people that it was awesome, they're more likely to believe that it was awesome? So it's up.
Really?
Subliminal priming.
Oh, man. This is freaking awesome.
Yeah. There you go. No, but I do think it has a lot of value, and you have a lot of value. My takeaway is, I don't know if you know this, but I'm literally going to be thinking about hoses and sponges tomorrow when I'm trading. It's a cool concept, a good way to understand it. That alone is a great market explanation. So that's awesome. We had a great chat. Thank you. Hopefully this is the beginning of something great. If you guys are listening, obviously a review and a rating on iTunes is the biggest way you could help Leo and I keep this going. Let us know if you enjoyed it. Let us know what you learned, what you want us to cover. But we're going to go and we're going to cover one topic on order flow every single time we get together. And we'll see where this takes us, Leo.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, man. Thanks for being on. We'll see you next time. What should we cover next time?
I don't know. We may have to do a Twitter poll.
Yeah. Follow Leo on Twitter. And by the way, I don't know how I could end this without saying this. It's probably in the intro. You know, guys, check out Orderflow Labs, because one thing that you benefit from with Orderflow Labs, and Leo's involved in this directly, is, you know, a lot of this order flow in its raw form is just, you know, it could be useful, but you got to do something with it. It's data you got to process. And what you guys have done at Orderflow Labs is, you know, you guys are on my screen every day. That reconstructed tape, can't trade it without it anymore. I removed my footprint chart in its entirety. And I think what you guys are doing is great. You're visualizing order flow and making it simpler in a visual way to grasp. So check them out, Orderflow Labs. And then Leo, what was your Twitter again?
It is ES_F_Leo.
Thank you for listening to Between the Spread. We need your help smashing through the offers above. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes to help us keep the bid strong. You can contact Leo on Twitter at ES_F_Leo. And to learn how to trade like a professional, visit TradeProAcademy.com and get started on your development today. Have a wonderful day, traders, and I'll see you on the Dom. Take care and goodbye.